Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Unfortunately, your flight to Bristol has been delayed once again. But for your entertainment purposes, please listen to the Baggage Claim Monday edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. The White Zone
is for immediate unloading. This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, August 1st, 2022. And today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, and I'm calling this a Baggage Claim Monday. Taylor, I know I'm not actually doing it from baggage claim, but this is just crazy. Like the travel and the things that we're doing. We had a game in San Francisco last night, took a red eye into Houston. We get the Astros and the Red Sox tonight, then flying tomorrow to JFK and then driving up to Bristol because we get the trade deadline special. It's a nutty time right now.
Buster, would you say you're experiencing some turbulence with your travels right now?
Oh, man.
But very exciting. We'll get to hang out in Bristol tomorrow.
Let's get started on that. All right. So we got a lot to get to today. Trade deadline coming up. We're going to be talking to Jesse Rogers, with Tim Kirkjian. But let's get to what happened over the course of the weekend. On Sunday, the Giants and the Cubs played, and Carlos Rodon, one of those players being talked about in the trade market because the Giants are listening. And, man, he looked great on Sunday.
Here's the 0-2. In there, got him looking. There's another strikeout. And Bodie is gone. And Carlos Rodon strikes out the side. He has struck out 8 in this one. Happ waits. Here's a 1-2. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. Ian Happ has gone on strikes for the first time today.
That was Bukshambi on ESPN Radio. I've got some intel about Carlos Rodon and a possible trade when I talk with Tim Kirkjian. Coming up here in a bit. Padres and the Twins. And it was tied bottom of the sixth inning when this happened.
Here it is. And Voit swings, kind of muscles it into shallow right field. That's going to get down for a base hit. Profar comes in to score. Padres back in front. It's 3-2.
And they would win 3-2. That from 97.3 The Fan. The Royals and the Yankees. And the Yankees took a lead in the bottom of the seventh.
High fly ball. Deep to right. There it goes. To the second deck, a three-run shot, and the Yankees lead 6-4.
Yeah, that was Michael Kay on the YES Network. So the Yankees are in good shape. They turned that lead over to their all-star closer, Clay Holmes, and this happened.
The 1-2, a swing and a drive to center field, and that ball is going to be carrying, and it is out of here. Home run, Salvador Perez. He puts the Royals in the lead in the top of the ninth.
That was Steve Fizeak, 610 KCSP. The Royals win 8-6, and Aaron Boone was answering questions about the struggling Clay Holmes over the weekend.
Just struggling a little bit to find his release point, but he's always obviously a pitch away, gets the lefty to start the inning, then loses the two guys, but, you know, has two strikes there with Perez, and you're kind of, even when he's searching for it a little bit there, you're always one pitch away, and Perez was able to elevate a sinker. You don't see many righties do that against him, if ever. So probably didn't quite have that bite on the sink that he normally does, but a really good power hitter, caught him, and just in kind of one of those you're not going to see very often.
Some other notes from over the weekend, the Angels' Mike Trout says his back is getting better, and he does expect to play before the end of this year. It's official. Jacob deGrom is set for his return on Tuesday, about a year and a month since his last outing in the majors. We'll see how good he is right out of the gate. We'll be talking with Tim about that. White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson was suspended 3 games for making contact with an umpire on Friday night. And he appealed that decision. Hot Ticket is brought to you by Vivid Seats, where you earn rewards with every purchase. Vivid Seats Rewards is your ticket to more tickets. Vivid Seats, life happens live. The Astros and the Mariners were live when this happened at the bottom of the 10th inning.
Astros looking for their 6th walk-off win, the 1-0. And that's a bouncing ball left side and against the defense, and the Astros will win it. Dupont scores. 3-2, the final in 10. Yordan Alvarez, the walk-off hit.
Robert Ford, KBME, 790 AM with that call. The Astros win 3-2. Reds and Orioles, and Brandon Drury is a name being kicked around in the trade market. He came to the plate in the bottom of the 8th inning, scored tied.
Here's the 1-2 pitch. And Drury swings, sends a high drive left field and deep. Santander is back. It is gone. Brandon Drury puts the Reds on top with a solo home run to left. And it is 3-2 Cincinnati.
That from 700 WLW, Drury perhaps makes sense for the Dodgers, who were busy over the weekend. They traded for reliever Chris Martin. The Padres are closing in on a five-year, $100 million deal with Joe Musgrove, who theoretically could have been a free agent in the fall. The Dodgers played in Colorado yesterday, and a rookie did this in his first plate appearance in the big leagues.
1-1 pitch. Swings and hits a drive deep to right field. This one headed back to the wall and is gone. A home run. The first major league at bat for James Outman. He hits a two-run shot to give the Dodgers a 2-0 lead. Oh, how do you like that?
Tim Never with that call. AM 570 LA Sports. After the Dodgers 7-3 win, Outman was asked about what he's going to do with the baseball.
I'm going to stare at it for a long time, and then I'm going to put it up in my childhood room. Next to all my other baseball stuff. I got like a shelf of like all my like Little League home runs and stuff like that. So that might top them all. But yeah, I think it's going to go there.
Earlier this year, Paul DeJong was sent to the minor leagues because he was really struggling with his hitting. Well, he seemed to have figured something out. He's back in the big leagues and he's doing damage.
The pitch to Paul DeJong, a swing and a high, hard contact fly ball to center, way back and gone! The ball lands on the batter's eye in center field for DeJong's second home run since his return from AAA.
During the course of this series, Cardinals and Nationals, there were shots of Mike Rizzo, general manager of the Nationals, and John Mozeliak, head of baseball operations for the Cardinals, sitting together in the press box, and that led to a lot of speculation because, of course, the Cardinals are one of the teams in on Juan Soto. The Braves and the Diamondbacks were tied 0-0 when Austin Riley did this.
Pitch to Riley. Fly ball right center field, heading to the gap, back to the wall, and that's going to go all the way to the wall. Olsen racing for the plate. Here he comes. Here comes the throw. You want a walk-off. You got it. 1-0 Braves as they walk it off and sweep the Diamondbacks.
That from 680 The Fan. Taylor, what else you got?
Buster, a couple things here. You're about to listen to Buster chat with Tim Kirkshen, but you can also watch that segment on ESPN's YouTube page. It shows up on there right about the time the podcast appears. So subscribe over on YouTube, ESPN's page there. Also, tomorrow, trade deadline show, we're going to record it. So there's no morning show. We're going to record it in the evening in person. Very excited for this. Buster and I never have seen each other face-to-face, so that should be a lot of fun. Jeff Passan will be in the mix, Sarah Langs, maybe a couple more surprises. As far as things to promote, ESPN, in partnership with Peyton Manning's Omaha Productions, presents Soup with Coop. Cooper Manning's invites players and coaches from across sports to share stories and laughs while enjoying a bowl of his guest's favorite soup. When the soup is finished, the conversation ends. That's Soup with Coop. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And finally, he was the face of the New York Yankees, a five-time World Series champion, the most popular and admired player in baseball, and one of the great sports superstars of any age. The captain tells the story of Derek Jeter's life and Hall of Fame career, anchored by exclusive, extensive, unprecedentedly candid interviews with Jeter, along with his family and dozens of teammates, rivals, and observers. Catch episodes 5 and 6 on Thursday, August 4th at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN and streaming on ESPN+.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkshen.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirkshen covers baseball for ESPN. He's the Hall of Famer now. Tim, when you sign autographs going forward, are you going to put HOF underneath your name?
No, because I'm not a Hall of Famer. That's a distinction for the players. Now, these collectors, they're everywhere, as you know. They're always sending stuff to you, me, whatever. If they say, could you please do this for me, I do it for them. Otherwise, I would never do it on my own. It's pretentious, and I'm not going to do it, but I don't want to be a jerk and tell somebody who really wants this on a baseball that I'm not going to do that. So if you ask, I will. If you don't, I won't.
So in the mural of your face in your living room, you're not going to put HOF in the lower right-hand corner either?
No. And I did mention somebody other than myself in my speech buster, which you were questioning me on. So no, that stuff doesn't matter. It's time to move on. We have a trade deadline. No more Hall of Fame.
Well, we do have one thing. Taylor, you remember the tweet we got the other day?
Yeah, let me dig it up here. We've got someone, Tim, who broke down some stats, basically, from your speech. It's going to take me a second here to dig it up. Hang on, everybody. Hang on. Got it right here. All right, so Lewis W. at Elu2718 wrote in, jokes about Tim Kirkshen's selfishness got me thinking. I counted roughly 43 shout-outs by name in his Hall of Fame speech, lasting 16 minutes and 53 seconds. That's a personal thanks to a different person on an average of every 23.6 seconds in a speech that had me in stitches and in tears. What a pro.
Tim?
Well, that was the hardest part of the speech, to make sure that I thanked all the proper people, from sports editors, people at ESPN. And I even thanked Buster, which really took a lot for me to do that. So thank you to that guy for the tail of the tape or whatever the heck that was. Seriously, all kidding aside, it was very important for me to make sure all the people that I've come across who've helped me so much in my business, including Buster, got a bit of a shout out or whatever you call it.
I appreciate it. And man, yeah, we've gotten a lot of mileage on the podcast about your alleged selfishness. That's for sure. Self-centeredness. All right, let's talk about Aaron Judge because we haven't had a bunch of trades. We'll start with that. Over the weekend, he went nuts. Over the last 2 weeks, he's been going nuts. Tim, he's on a pace for 66 homers. He's on a pace for 137 runs, 143 RBI. He's going to reach base like 260 times. Is he changing your thoughts about the American League MVP?
No, I've never changed. He's the most valuable player in the American League, period. If it started now, I would vote for him. And 2 months from now, I would vote for him again. He's the best player on the best team. And I love Shohei Ohtani. I understand he has his own category, but that's the MVP. Buster, going into yesterday, he had hit 9 homers in the second half. That's more than 17 teams had hit. He has 9 multi-homer games this year. No Yankee has ever had 9 multi-homer games in one season. And we have 2 months to go. His 42nd homer was number 200 in his career. Only Ryan Howard needed fewer games to get to 200 homers in Major League history. He has been stunningly good. 4 walk-off hits this year, having no walk-off hits coming into this season in his career. 4 walk-off hits, 3 of them homers. He's the best player and the most valuable player in the American League for me.
So the other day, before our broadcast of the second game in that series between the Yankees and the Mets, I asked Aaron Boone, why are opposing teams pitching to him? I asked other people in the Yankees that, and you know, there was a lot of talk about, well, Anthony Rizzo's a really good hitter too. Tim, I still wonder why you would pitch to him. And then on Saturday, after seeing Judge, you know, do his magic on Friday, the Royals walked him twice Saturday and twice on Sunday. I got to believe we're going to see more and more of that as we go along here. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Anthony Rizzo had a huge homer yesterday. He's got 25. Giancarlo Stanton is coming back, and he's a very dangerous man when he's swinging it well. But there, I'm with you. He's seeing way too many pitches to hit is Aaron Judge. He's too good right now, and you have to avoid him if at all possible and let somebody else beat you. That's how good he has been. And Buster, again, when he can play center field and he made a jumped over the outfield fence the other day to rob a homer. He's not just some big, as Buck Showalter, some big hairy guy who hits homers. He's sitting close to 300. He's playing really good defense. He can run. There's nothing not to like about the way that guy's playing.
I think the better the year that he has, you know, let's say he hits 66 homers and he wins the American League MVP, and you know, he continues to put these massive numbers and he has a huge postseason. I think the better the year he has, Tim, reduces the likelihood he's back with the Yankees, because I think all of these things that he's accomplishing now inevitably are going to inspire rival owners to take a look at him and say, I want that guy to be the face of my franchise, and to have that, you know, one or two other owners jump in and blow the Yankees offer of $213.5 million in the spring out of the water. And I don't think the Yankees will improve their offer, but I don't think they'll chase him in a big way. In other words, we heard in the spring that they were miles apart from signing Aaron Judge. You know, Judge certainly has made his case by betting on himself during the course of the year. If this goes to, you know, 300, north of 300 in the bidding for him in the offseason, I don't think the Yankees are going to chase him. And I think he's going to potentially wind up with another team. What about you?
Well, I'm confused by the whole thing. Let's say he hits 66 homers and the Yankees win the World Series. How in the world do they justify not re-signing somebody who's done everything correctly through his entire Yankee term? What if he hits 66 homers and the Mets win the World Series and the Yankees get knocked out, and now the Mets are the best team in Major League Baseball? How do the Yankees justify letting him go then? So I think there are two scenarios where the Yankees say, we're going to have to go over $300 million. We're going to have to overpay because we have to bring him back. So I think there are two distinct ways of looking at this. Your way makes all the sense in the world, and yet they're still the Yankees. And how in the world, with all their money and resources, do they allow that guy to get away? I'm confused by the whole thing. I can't wait to see what happens.
All right. Not a lot of trades so far. The biggest one, I think, to this point, Luis Castillo going from the Cincinnati Reds to the Mariners. I was talking with an evaluator who was involved on the periphery in these conversations. And his team had some frustration that they didn't get a lot of traction at Castillo. And then they heard the return to the Reds of essentially, you know, three of the Mariners' top five prospects in that deal. And this evaluator said, yeah, okay, that makes complete sense. I totally get why the Reds would make that trade with the Mariners. What was your take on that deal?
Yeah, that was a haul. A complete haul for the Reds. And in a rebuild, that's exactly what they needed to do. So I talked to an American League manager the other day who told me, well, the Mariners were already going to the playoffs because they're really good. Now they're definitely going to the playoffs after getting Luis Castillo. So, you know, here's a team that hasn't been there since 2001. They've had some close brushes, including last year, didn't make it. And I have an American League manager saying, well, they're in now because they got that guy. I mean, Buster, Luis Castillo has been really good lately. He's a difference maker. He can turn, you know, a non-contender maybe into a contender and maybe a contender into a champion. I'm not saying the Mariners are better than the Astros or the Yankees, but that's another element. But the only way you get better is if you overpay once in a while, and they really paid a lot for Luis Castillo.
All right. The three teams that are being talked about the most around Juan Soto, the player we're all waiting to hear about, Cardinals, Padres, and Dodgers. Among those three teams, which team needs to make a deal for him the most?
Well, I'm with you, Buster. I don't know if you still believe it. I still think the Padres need him the most. The Padres are in a fight to win a playoff spot. They didn't win a playoff spot last year. They got everyone excited. And I think you look at their lineup, even when Fernando Tatis Jr. comes back. And I think they're a bat short. I think their pitching is really good. And I think they would be a beyond dangerous team if they were to get Juan Soto and go Tatis Jr., Soto, and Manny Machado for the next three postseasons. I would take my chances with that, with the pitching that they have. The Cardinals, of course, need Juan Soto. The question is, do they need a starting pitcher or two even more? So yep. Does that get in the way of the Cardinals making a deal? And the Dodgers are 35 games over 500 right now with all sorts of things having gone wrong. I can see them saying we have everything it takes to get him. Look at our lineup when we put Soto in it. But I'm going to put them as third, as certainly third on someone who need a team that needs Juan Soto, because they don't need much. They're that good.
Yeah, I'm going to be talking with Jesse Rogers coming up here. My theory on the Dodgers is that they're goosing the Padres. They're trying to drive up the price. Would that make sense for you?
Of course. Those teams don't like each other. They're in the same division. The Dodgers could do whatever they want now with the money and resources they have, and they may say, let's get involved in this. And then the Padres are going to have to give up one more prospect than they want to give up. And let's make them do that. Let's make it hurt if they're going to get Juan Soto on their team.
Last night, it looks like Wilson Contreras played his last game with the Cubs. He's going to get traded probably sometime on Tuesday, based on what I was told over the weekend. The teams most mentioned in regards to him, the Rays, the Astros, the Padres. When I've done radio about Contreras over the weekend, Tim, I've mentioned that, look, he's an all-star, three-time all-star. He's a terrific offensive player, but I hear this over and over and over again from interested teams or teams that have at least taken a look at him. His defense is a concern, and they worry about, you know, a catcher coming in and trying to meld with the pitching staff with just 2 months to go. What have you heard?
Yeah, that's really hard to do. Let's look, the Rays are so desperate for another hitter, at least to me. Even though they got David Peralta, I think they would put Wilson Contreras behind the plate and say, we'll figure this out. And yet, the Rays win because of the all the little things that make them better, and that's the coordination between the catcher and the pitcher. And if that doesn't work, and their only real strength right now, their pitching, is limited somehow because they don't have the right catcher, maybe he goes somewhere else. The Astros catching has been so weak offensively. Can you imagine Dusty Baker adding Wilson Contreras to that lineup? I think Dusty's the type that would say, look, we'll give up a little bit on framing here to get that guy's bat in the order. And they're hitting under 200 last I checked as a unit, the catchers in Houston. That might make them a World Series champion if they were to get Wilson Contreras. I understand the defense, but every once in a while you got to say, this guy's going to hit a bunch of homers when he shows up.
Jacob deGrom will return to the Mets rotation on Tuesday against the Washington Nationals. It'll be more than a year, Tim. About a year and a month is his last outing in the big leagues. What do you expect?
I'm really confused as to what to expect. Every time he goes out there, I expect him to be dominant because he's great. He's one of the best pitchers we've ever seen. But you take a year away from this game, and now you're pitching on the biggest stage with all this pressure in the middle of a pennant race. I don't know what to expect. But my guess is he's going to pitch four or five innings. He's going to be really good. And they're going to get him out of there. I know I've talked to people with the Mets, and they don't know what to expect just because it's been so long. Buster, this is the hardest game in the world to play. You take a year away from it, and something as fine as the art of pitching, who knows what they're going to get? But he's thrown 100 in the minor leagues. If he's thrown 100 in the big leagues, he's going to pitch four or five really good innings, and then we'll see how he feels on Wednesday.
Yeah, the thing I'm really curious about when he comes back is what Jacob deGrom are we going to see? Because I know, and you know, that last year there started to be this rumbling of conversation of, boy, you know, maybe throwing 100 miles per hour on every pitch isn't a good idea for him. Maybe he should dial it back a little bit. I think there are other folks in the Mets organization who believe that could be better. I bumped into Kevin Plawecki, who's a longtime friend and teammate in the Mets organization. Now Kevin's now with the Red Sox, as you know. And he just smiled at that theory. He goes, nah, he's way too competitive to do that. I don't know if you saw a video of his last minor league start when he got knocked around. He gave up a couple home runs, four runs in four innings. What really jumped out at me, Tim, was how little effort there was in the delivery. And that may have been, I'm sure it probably was by design, but he looked like he's throwing about 70-80%, and it was just so different looking. So I'm not sure exactly, you know, are we going to see the DeGrom that's coming out breathing fire and throw five innings of 100 miles per hour and dominate everybody? Or are we actually going to see a pitcher who's now in his mid-30s trying to make an adjustment and dialing back in an effort to stay healthy?
I'm with Kevin Plawecki on this. I'm not sure he's capable of not competing at 100%. I think when you throw 100, you go out there and you want to throw 100. You don't want to throw 92. That's not good enough. You know, we tell great center fielders, we don't want you to run into the wall, so don't play as hard. They can't do that. We tell hitters, look, cut down on your swing. We don't need you to try to hit a home run on every pitch when a lot of guys still do that no matter what. I think it's really hard to take a tremendous athlete, wildly competitive, and say, don't try as hard. I don't think it works that way, and I don't think it'll work that way with Jacob DeGrom. I think he's breathing fire, as you said. I think he's throwing 100 until he comes out.
Yeah, I would love to watch that outing, but that's going to be right after the trade deadline. And I think I'm going to like be recovering at that point. Yeah. You will too. Maybe that'll be nice. We can actually sit back and watch a ball game and not worry about where Juan Soto is going to be traded. All right, Tim, I will see you on the desk tomorrow.
Okay, Buster, travel safely and try to get some sleep. So glad you got a room there.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Jesse Rogers covers baseball for ESPN, and Jesse, that means waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for all these trades to evolve. What's going on?
I think it's your normal, we're waiting for prices to come down situation, and also obviously the Juan Soto situation complicates things as well. For example, if the Padres trade for Juan Soto, they're done. That's it. They've got no prospects left. But if they don't trade for Juan Soto, they've got their fishing rod in the water, so to speak, on a lot of deals. And so I think we're waiting on both ends. I have my doubts about Soto going to the Padres. I kind of think it's the Dodgers or bust, but we'll see. So I think there's a few factors, but we'll see a flurry of deals over the next 24 to 36 hours for sure.
I actually think that we are going to get a wave of deals. Now, at the end of it, you might have casual fans say, where's the beef? You know, to draw something from the line from the 1980s, where they're going to look at it and say, hey, last year's trade deadline, we had 10 All-Stars traded. This year, you know, up until the moment you and I are talking now, there have only been two All-Stars from 2022 traded. They might not feel like that there's necessarily the big star power. But I do think there are going to be a number of deals, especially involving relievers. What's your sense?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, every year is different, but I think I was talking to an executive the other day, adding that third wild card has had somewhat of an impact here. More teams are in it. And this is what the executive said, Buster. Even if you're not in it, but you kind of like your team and you think, well, maybe we could challenge for that third wild card with a 500 record next year, you're not ready to unload. So I think there's been some consequences of adding that extra wild card in each league, at least until the very end here. Like, for example, maybe San Francisco talks themselves into keeping all their guys because they're not that far out of it. Or maybe at the last minute they do end up selling. Obviously, Boston has changed. So at the very least, I think teams are kind of waiting things out to the last minute. But I do think the extra wild card is having an impact on the deadline. And it's, again, teams thinking, well, if we're not in it this year, we keep our team as is, maybe add on the edges. We might be in it next year.
So I asked executives on Sunday, again, as I've been doing for the whole month of July, and I'm sure you have too, do they believe that Juan Soto is going to be traded? And I continue to get yes. And they continue to, you know, cite what we've talked about, you know, dating back to May, that it feels like that the Washington ownership situation might be driving this conversation. Reports have this this talk between the Nationals, other teams, down to three teams, the Dodgers, Padres, and Cardinals. You say Dodgers are bust. Tell me why.
Well, let me start with saying, as the moment this became public, I thought of St. Louis. This is the first team I thought of, even more so than because they absolutely do have the major league and minor league talent to do it. I don't think San Diego has that combination, but I do think the Dodgers have it. And let's face it, when the Dodgers want something, they usually get it. But I think Mike Rizzo would have a nice little face-off between St. Louis and L.A. when it comes to both major league talent combined with top-end prospects. Those are the two organizations that I think could do it. You know, Buster, I had someone tell me yesterday, an agent, suggest Cleveland. Cleveland has enough to get it done. And I said, what are you, crazy? They're not doing that. I said, why not? Three pennant races. They're already in one right now. But let's face it, it usually does come down to a team like the Dodgers. We saw it, Mike Rizzo and John Mozeliak in the same suite the other day, and everyone went nuts. So I wouldn't shock me if it was St. Louis. But I feel like the Dodgers can weather, you know, sort of this kind of a deal in the middle of a pennant race and potentially sign him long term.
So I'll kick around some of the things I've heard about each of those teams. One with the Cardinals, some of John Mozeliak's peers have told me, look, they're all saying things along these lines. They don't think that John is someone who is going to step up and make a massive prospect dump for one player, because they feel like the Cardinals are in a commanding position in the National League Central. When you see the Cubs going through a rebuild, the Brewers have limited resources, the Reds are now, you know, they're not going to be relevant for a long time. The Pirates might be competitive next year, but the thought is that Mozeliak just will not have the stomach to unload a lot of players, who, by the way, doesn't fit their primary need, which is for a starting pitcher. What do you think?
I agree with that 100%. And that's why I thought of St. Louis, but kind of like at the end of the day, are they really going to do that? And you're so right. They could trade for Juan Soto. It would be their only deal, and they wouldn't go far because pitching dominates in October, and they don't have enough of it unless Jack Flaherty gets healthy out of nowhere. So I'm with you. This pennant race for St. Louis is really about pitching more than Juan Soto.
The Dodgers, you're right. You know, they could theoretically fill a truckload. They could create a truckload of prospects that they could trade to the Nationals. Jeff Passan wrote today about how they probably have more depth in their pitching to make a Soto trade. And we've been accustomed to the Dodgers making major trades. Yu Darvish, Manny Machado, Trey Turner, Max Scherzer. Jesse, they also have a massive lead in that division. And, you know, coming up, if they trade for Juan Soto, then the conversation immediately begins, will they be the team that gives him the contract that starts with the number five? If my gut instinct on this thing is, the Dodgers are hanging in it to push the Padres. They're reading the market and they're saying, you know what, the Padres in the end are going to wind up paying the highest price for Soto. And so we want to just posture and drive up the number for the Padres, drive up the prospect haul going the other way. What do you think?
I just wonder if San Diego actually has enough to do it without completely depleting their farm. They don't have major league talent like the Cardinals or Dodgers do that's already started their clock. Obviously, Mike Rizzo doesn't want a guy that's on his third year. But I don't know. I think that the Dodgers would do it because they aren't thinking about just this year. They're thinking about the next five. This is how they keep things going. So I'm not sure it's posturing. They don't have to sign him. They could keep him for 2.5 years and unload him or let him walk. Although I think they would try to sign him. I feel like it to me, it still feels like the Dodgers. In fact, I'm still in the minority that Mike Rizzo might just take this to the winter meetings. And all of a sudden, when you go to the winter meetings, Buster, the Mets, the Dodgers, the Yankees, they no longer have 10-game leads. Not that the Mets have one now. But you know what, Houston, now you truly do bring everybody back into the mix, because I do think the pennant race changes things. It gets some teams maybe a little desperate, and that's what Mike Rizzo is hoping for, but also kind of pushes some teams out that are like, I'm not ready to do this. Well, Tim Kurchin said it yesterday. This is a six-month deal. Now you want me to have it done in 2 weeks? So I'm not completely convinced it happens. The reason I do still feel like it might is it's just become so public. I don't think Mike Rizzo or Scott Boras allows this to become so public if this was going to go to the winter meetings, because this hangs over a team and a player's head for a while. So maybe it will happen. I'm still putting the Dodgers number one.
Well, and Mike Rizzo, has answered the question. He did a radio interview last week in which he, was asked, hey, are you under a mandate by ownership to make this deal? He said, no, that's not the case at all. He also said 2 months ago that they weren't going to trade him.
Right, so right, right.
Who knows where the truth lies there? But that's the key question behind the scenes. What has he been told to do? It might be that, all this conversation with executives trying to guess as to whether or not he's going to be traded. If he's actually under orders to make the deal, then obviously it's going to happen and he's not going to have a choice as to whether to do that. And you're right. In theory, if he could wait, he could be sitting there in January with the Yankee team that just lost Aaron Judge to another team in free agency. And maybe the Yankees, they have a different context, and maybe they look at Juan Soto in a different way. And, as great as Judge has been, let's face it, Soto long-term might fit the Yankees better because he's a left-handed hitter and he's 7 years younger.
And I'm not convinced the Mets and Steve Cohn don't get involved at some level just because he's the shiny new object. So, remember, people in the game know this. July is also about feeling out things for December. I think that's what's going on with Ohtani, for example. This is a little different with ownership maybe giving him his marching orders. But you never know. You start something in July, you finish it off in December or January. It's either holding things up here, or it's going to happen, and there's going to be a flood of other trades with other teams as soon as it does.
Let's muse just for a moment, just for fun, because I no matter where Juan Soto goes, he obviously is a perfect fit, and you love to put in, what their lineup would look like. If he goes to the Cardinals, how much fun it would be for Ollie Marmol to draw his name up between that of Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado. If he goes to the Padres, to put his name in between Tatis Jr. and Manny Machado, that would be cool. Put him in that Dodger lineup.
it's sick. It's sick. And back to the Cardinals, what they like to say when they trade for someone, hey, they like some of these guys fall in love with St. Louis and they end up re-signing. We saw that with Goldschmidt. Who knows? Maybe Soto finds a home there. You never know. But you go to L.A., you find a home there too, because they have all the money in the world. So look, you put him in Texas, put him in Texas between Seager and Simeon. Like, put him anywhere, but put him in Chicago between Luis Robert and Eloy Jimenez, right? I mean, he fits in any lineup and makes them so much more dangerous. I think you wrote it and talked about it, generational because of the age. You just don't get a guy like this so accomplished at such a young age on the market. It's amazing.
Yeah. Andrew Friedman, and at this point, I'm just guessing, but I still think Andrew Friedman in the end doesn't want to pay twice for Soto. And that's what he would have to do. He would have to give up a boatload of prospects. He got Mookie Betts on this ridiculous, as it turns out, this ridiculously a bargain handed to him. And that would not be the case with Soto. He would have to give up a huge portion of his farm system. My instinct is, I just don't think he's going to do it. I think he's just goosing AJ Preller and trying to drive that price. But we'll see. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah. Let me mention one thing about the Mets. The tax would be enormous. The trade
they're not
tax.
Getting involved. Yeah. So, the Nationals aren't going to trade him in the division right now.
It would take the usual deal plus two more prospects. to trade within the division. You get that in the division tax. Okay, go ahead, Buster.
Yeah, no, I was going to say maybe in the wintertime, but now I can't see.
No, not even then, probably. Not even in the wintertime, probably. But anyway. Yep.
All right. Carlos Rodon, I saw him in San Francisco last night. He pitched great, albeit it was against the Cubs. That is a really thin lineup, but he was spectacular. Obviously, I think after everybody saw the high price that the Seattle Mariners paid for Luis Castillo the other day, it makes sense to me to take Rodon out into the trade market if you're the Giants. You're kind of hanging on the fridge of the wild card. But the more that I talked to people yesterday, Jesse, the more I don't think they're going to trade him. You know, he potentially could be a free agent at year's end because he can opt out of his deal. But here's the thing. When's the last time the Giants went full-blown sell mode? Like, they just don't do it. And we were at the ballpark last night. It's packed. You know, the fans are excited. Rodon is one of the – on a team that right now is looking for headliners. He's, you know, potentially as one of the two most impactful pitchers they have. I think it's more likely they just keep him and then try to sign him to a longer-term deal, blow up his old deal, and try to work something else out. What's your gut?
Well, there's three teams that I think of that almost never sell, and San Francisco is one of them. St. Yep. Louis is the other. And if you can believe it, Colorado is the third. They don't really rebuild there. In fact, they sign their closer, which is a strange thing, to a two-year extension. Yeah, but they don't sell. So you have to respect that in some, you know, they don't strip it all down. They also don't win much. But anyway, look, when you have three wild cards and there's five teams for those three spots and you're four games out and you haven't been healthy, I mean, the job is to get in. And we saw Washington, we saw Atlanta get in and win it. I don't think this Giants team can win it all, but every season is sacred. That's quoting Theo Epstein. You're four out of the wild card without Crawford in the lineup, you know, with other major injuries. If two guys in concussion protocol, I could absolutely see them keeping them. And maybe last night was sort of the game that convinced them in general. They played a really clean game again against the Cubs, but he was great. The team was great. And this is with all these injuries. So you can make a case that they could sneak into that third wild card. And you're right. They don't have a history of doing these things. I actually wrote something for ESPN.com today. I suggested a trade which would allow them to still compete and do something to add to their future. I said, how about trade Jock Peterson to the Chicago White Sox, who are desperate for a lefty, for AJ Pollock and a prospect or two? Pollock still lets you compete if you're the Giants, and you get something back in case you don't end up winning it. Sox are in the win mode now. Giants are in the, we're trying to win, but we're thinking about the future too. So in general, I can see the Giants doing both, making a couple trades on the fringes or maybe bigger than that while still trying to compete for that wild card.
And there is a lot of logic that you could build for the Giants to trade Rodon in this moment because he could walk away as a free agent in the fall. And his value right now is really high because you got to believe that a team like the Cardinals, you know, the Yankees would be aggressive. And especially with the Cardinals, when you watch the Giants right now, it's an older team. Like they have this group of older platoon type players. They need some young position player blood in there. And you know this, the Cardinals are loaded with that. So, you know, we'll see. But, again, the history is that they don't do those type of deals. They don't blow up the team. They don't give up in midseason. Farhan, as you know, his formative years were spent with the Oakland Athletics, who, you know, while right now their owner may have taken their payroll down to nothing and they might be tanking right now, in the past, they didn't. Like Billy Beane famously worked to compete every year, even when, you know, they were had – you know, such a minuscule number of resources compared to some of the other clubs. All right, so let's go rapid fire through some of the other possibilities. I think Wilson Contreras last night played his last game with the Cubs. David Robertson, I think, gets moved before the deadline. He might have the highest volume of bidders going after him because of his versatility. I talked to him. He just wants resolution. Tell me what you think is going to happen with some of the Cubs guys.
Well, I do think you've heard these reports. There'll be a package, a couple of them together, maybe starting with Wilson Contreras, who's a two-month rental. Ian Happ has that extra year. There's Michael Givens. There's Scott Efros, who I think is going to be on the move. And as you mentioned, Robertson. Last year, they did well trading Baez, Bryant, and Rizzo. But maybe not for top end, although there's a few guys in the minors having good years. If they can package a couple guys to San Diego, that's where you get maybe a number one prospect. I don't understand why Cleveland isn't involved in Wilson Contreras, at least known. They have a terrible hitting situation from catcher. They have a chance to win that division. They have a pitching infrastructure that I don't think Wilson Contreras is going to ruin, right? Because he has some warts in terms of behind the plate. The five worst teams via OPS from the catching position are all playoff contenders. Houston, St. Louis, actually, they're not going to trade for him. Tampa Bay, and of course the Mets are number one. I'd be shocked if he wasn't a Met or a Padre, and it would, and in a package deal. Robertson and Contreras to the Mets, Robertson and Contreras to the Padres. But I think the Mets are going to be most aggressive. You can add a huge offensive bat at a position that you are dead last in baseball in. But there's a few teams on the fringes there. Houston, boy, if you could combine Maldonado's defense with Wilson's offense, Buster, you'd have an all world catcher. So some interesting teams that may not catch him every day, but I think the Mets have to be at the top of that list.
There was a report yesterday, I think it was Zach Mizell, who reported that the Guardians are talking to Oakland about Sean Murphy, their catcher. And that makes sense to me because I think the Guardians really value the catching metrics. When you look at their history of guys that they've brought up to Roberto Perez and Yan Gomes. So that's going to be a focus for them. I wonder if they would pivot to do something for Christian Vasquez, but that would be kind of weird. It's amazing. Over the weekend, because the Red Sox have been fading lately, it basically was like, it's over. The Red Sox are going to be sellers. They basically have the same record as the Guardians do. I don't know exactly how close they are, but I think one of the complicating factors for the Red Sox is we talk about them selling off is the fact that they owe so many players so much money. Like J.D. Martinez, Red Sox have told other teams, yeah, we'll talk about J.D. in a possible deal. Jesse, he's owed $6-7 million for the rest of this season. Nathan Eovaldi, in theory, he's out there. He's owed about $6 million for the rest of the season. You know, and I know, teams are not taking on that kind of money readily this time of year.
Well, Cleveland wanted, it would be perfect, like if they needed him. That J.D. Martinez seems like he should be on the Dodgers in a pennant race, but they don't need him, and they don't need to spend that money. You're right; it does limit. Yankees don't need another right-hander. I mean, say all these lefties that move, Buster. Look, the value of left-handed bats, even if their guys have an okay years like Tyler Naquin or David Peralta, they're okay players, but they're so valuable because they're lefties. So his money and the fact that he's right-handed, I think, limit the teams that need him. Maybe the Red Sox eat a few dollars and don't get much in terms of the prospect back. It is interesting, that Boston's had three seasons within one. Terrible, great, and then terrible again. It's made Heim Bloom really have to pivot, and we'll see how much they get done in the next 24 hours or so. It might be just let's get rid of as much salary as we can and sort of start this thing over. Not completely, obviously, if you keep Bogarts and Devers, you have a foundation there. But, yes, I think San Francisco and Boston are the two kind of most interesting teams late here. They've had some failures lately. San Francisco had a 7-game losing streak. Boston getting crushed at home here. What do they do? You kind of mentioned San Francisco. Boston's even more intriguing. You really can't rebuild there either. So how much do you trade? How much money do you eat? Those are all good questions.
Yeah, I think Alex Speer was the one who wrote a piece in the Boston Globe today about how the Red Sox might try to get under the luxury tax threshold, I think at $230 million. And they're about $7 or $8 million away. So they can shed that salary of J.D. Martinez and Nate Eovaldi and others. Maybe they get under that number. But I think that's going to be a hard sell in Boston. just having lived up there, they're not used to this mentality of, hey, we're not going to try to pretend that we're a big market team and we're not going to sign players. We'll see how that goes.
They're also not used to looking up at the Orioles in the standings. So that's got to be a hard pill to swallow as well.
Exactly. While Taylor's raising his arms and with excitement over the fact that the Orioles are in this position. All right, Jesse, thanks for doing this. Hang in there.
You got it. See you, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher tweets for Amundi. First up, David at BaseballFan1918 writes in, which fan bases will be most disappointed on August 2nd at 6.01 p.m. Eastern time for either not getting the big superstar or for not going all in on the rebuild?
I think Red Sox fans, first off, I think they're generally not happy with what's going on to begin with. And I don't, so I talked about with JD Martinez and Eovaldi and some, I don't know what you could get in return, all the money that's involved. They seem caught in the middle. And I don't think the fan base is not going to be disappointed, but I am curious about what the Orioles do, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, and you can tell me what you feel at this moment.
I mean, the team has been playing above its head for a while. So this weekend against the Reds, I mean, it wasn't totally crazy that they lost the series. I wouldn't be too crestfallen if they did trade Trey Mancini or Jorge Lopez to try and get something. You know, it's okay. I mean, I like that they're competitive, but I understand that this isn't the year that they're really going for it. So, and I know that Mike Elias, he doesn't want to start the clock on any of these prospects. So they can improve the team with guys they already have, but they're not going to do that. So whatever.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool if they spent some money and improved the team. That would be fun.
It would be really cool. Mitchell at Tigers of Detroit writes in, with Judge seemingly hitting another home run every night, do you expect to see more teams intentionally walk him? I was shocked when I saw he only had 6 on the season. That is a crazy number.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up with Tim. Mitchell, I agree with you. Taylor, what do you think?
Aren't you
surprised he's not being a walk more?
Oh, my God.
I'm not pitching to that guy. And I get it. Rizzo, terrific year. You know, I talked to him the other day. He seemed so happy. He's enjoying his time with the Yankees. But I'm sorry, Aaron Judge is doing historic stuff.
Absolute menace. Josh, I'm going to botch Josh's name, so I will skip it. But Josh writes in, who decides the rank of prospects within an organization? Would a team ever tag a player with a higher rank to use them as trade bait while keeping a potentially better player as a lower rank?
Hell yeah, they would. look at the services, the media sites, you know, Baseball America, ESPN, MLB.com. They do the rankings, but they do it in conversation with executives. And oh yeah, there's no doubt. You know, there are executives who will pump up prospects to try to pump up their trade value. They'll just rave about a guy, and then you'll hear from other people like, boy, I don't know about that kid and whether or not he's going to develop. There's a completely different perspective, which is why cross-referencing all these players is so important.
We got a burner account here. Hey, Buster at Hey Buster Pod writes in, Nico Horner is quietly hitting 300, 763 OPS and only 34 strikeouts and has a 1.6 defensive WAR, fourth among all players. Haven't heard anyone mention him when talking about potential future stars. Do you think he needs some more love?
I want to see more. 763 OPS is not something that you're going to, you know, stop the presses about, to borrow an old phrase. And the other thing, too, is that I think part of the reason why he's not getting a lot of attention is because the Cubs are a hard watch these days. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
We just saw him on Sunday Night Baseball. That is a thin lineup, and maybe Nico stands out in part because of that. Does that make sense, Taylor?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, they're a tough watch. I watched a little bit of the game last night, but it wasn't really doing it for me. Andy Felt at Felt Andy is up next. He writes in, Buster, how badly do the Dodgers need to make a splash for a legitimate closer? At some point, the Dodgers have to be honest about Craig Kimbrell, as he has been awful this year and will cost them games in the playoffs.
I think they need to build in safety nets. I think you go into the late part of the season as they did in some years with Kenley Jansen, assuming he would be the guy. But I think you have to have an open mind if he continues to struggle.
Tevi Troy at Tevi Troy writes in, Aaron Judge is on an insane tear. His last 14 games, you've spoken about the disproportionate number of bad strike calls against him by the umpires. Is there any evidence that he's been getting better calls during this period?
I will take a look. I have not specifically looked at that data. But there's no doubt it's amazing. The umpires really struggle with it. And I got to give Aaron credit. I remember once asking him about, you know, why he doesn't just go off on umpires, because there's so many missed calls against him. But I think it comes down to, he's like a really nice guy and he just doesn't want to chastise him too much. But you can see from his expression when he thinks it's a bad call. And oh, by the way, Aaron Boone is picking up the fight for him over and over and over again. We've seen that.
Yes, indeed. Last one for today. LGM at Neil LGM writes in, Buster, you've said the Red Sox lowballed Devers by offering him a similar contract to Matt Olson. Are they within 100 career at bats of each other during that time? Olson has 30 more home runs, higher OPS plus, 133 versus 126. Why should the money be so different?
Devers is 3 years younger. And this year, his adjusted OPS plus at age 25 is plus 166. Olson is an all-star. His is at 129. Based on those numbers, based on the age, which player would you invest more money in? It's not close.
There you have it, LGM. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And remember, no show tomorrow morning. We're going to get you one after the trade deadline
in
real life. Very excited for this, Buster. Going to be a big day tomorrow.
It's going to be a big day. Travel back to Bristol, do the trade deadline show, which starts at 4 o'clock after we have a game tonight, Red Sox and Astros. If you get a chance, see that. I think that's 8 o'clock Eastern time. And then we'll see. Will Juan Soto land with another team? That's it for today. My thanks to Tim, Jesse, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.